cliffcentral.com.
Ah, there we are. Hello. I didn't have the right thing plugged into the right thing, so very embarrassing. What a way to start the morning. I know. Very, very rude. No, I think you're also coming through the wrong thing. So yeah, hang on a second. Let's see this. Let's try again. How very rude. Talk to me, Sia. Let me check your levels. No. Something's not right. All right. Well, I'll try and figure this out as we go. CliffCentral.com. Good morning. We have lots of things happening today, but most especially and most excitingly, we have none other than Gilly Upter is back. Yes, people asked especially for Gilly, and here she is. She managed to make it up this morning and join us. Thank you, Gilly.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, hang on. This is a great start. I've just got to figure out. I'm going out and I'm going to come back in. Let me just try and figure this out because Gilly's not coming through the right speaker, and neither are you, Sia. So
no.
I'm going to see you now. Let me go out and come back. Yeah, terrible. Let me do this properly. Okay, enter this, and now let's see. Okay, microphone's working. Let's see if this is on. That's working. Ah, very good. All right, excellent. And then that has to go there. Ah. Audio is not very complicated. You've got male and female audio parts, right? And the audio part for the male is obviously something that looks like, let me just show you.
Yes.
Oh, we can perfect. Hear you loud and clear.
So basically you've got these little pluggy thingies.
Oh. You have to look out for number one
there we
in
are.
Life. That's
Sorry,
all I'm
guys.
Saying.
There, now we're working properly. All right. So you say I'm obsessed with the binary gender norms, and that's my problem. But really, I mean, like, technology doesn't allow for like gender non-binary things to happen. Audio is.
I think we need
linear.
To progress in the terminology. You know, that's all I'm saying.
Okay, so let's change the terminology. So first of all, what are those oats? Are you on some kind of health tip, or is this what you do every day?
No. I'm just hungry, and I'm doing this show. Almost spilled that all over my laptop. I'm doing this show from the gym.
Oh, very impressive.
From the gym boardroom, because it's quiet here, and, you know, it's... And I've got a training session after this, so I figured I'm just going to do it. And there's somebody here that can make me oats, you know what I'm saying?
What a win. I think that's terrific, because... If you're anything like me, you can't. I don't know how to make breakfasts or to make anything complicated. Certainly, oats sounds like a complicated thing to do. And I do remember that.
No, oats. I mean, breakfast is the only thing I can make, actually. But who's got time in the morning?
So what did you make of the whole Suez Canal thing and that boat that blocked up the Suez Canal? Because I'm sure you have something to say about that.
Talking about technology, things not working.
Yeah.
I did wonder how it is possible for something like that to happen, you know. I mean, usually I don't think the boats are big enough for something like that to happen. That's what I'm saying. You know, usually the boats slide right through, if you know what I mean.
What? No, I don't know what
are
you mean.
Are we still talking about
this
the boats?
This may no longer be about boats.
Yeah. Listen, Gilly, we need to just sort out your levels here this morning as well. So you're very loud there.
No.
So we just need to
know.
Yeah, we just need to bring down your levels a little bit because last week people
How were, do I do that? Was that you?
I think it's like
I can do it on my side.
It's like a not shout situation. But here's Tracy saying,
I don't want it because sometimes I do shout, so I want that to be, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to come across as like a fishwife.
What's a fishwife?
No. They always my
so
mother.
Scared. I'm so scared for the answer of this.
My mother used to
what
say to us
that?
When we were kids, and we would shout. She'd say, "Don't shout! That's what fishwives do." So I think it must be something that in the Middle Ages people who used to sell fish would shout at each other like that. Doesn't sound
like such I don't a have any fish
thing.
To sell.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a nice thing. Not at all. Anyway, they managed to dislodge that ship that had been blocking the Suez Canal. But I saw some amazing footage of all the other ships that were lined up waiting to get through the canal. And it's unbelievable. It was like thousands and thousands and thousands of ships. And really, I had no idea that there were that many waiting in the wings. But you know, we were joking about it and carrying on, but billions and billions and billions of dollars of trade put on hold until they could clear that ship out of the way.
Do you think, did you lose anything in that trade? Were you waiting for something that didn't arrive?
No, thank God. Yeah. I'm not such a big deal that I have containers full of stuff heading anywhere. But I'm sure that there
are... You didn't order a bride from anywhere. That's...
No. Not yet. But if you do, apparently they don't bring those... Joking. Apparently they don't bring those by container. You just go to the...
Oh, I see.
You go to one of the major, you know, Mavericks in Cape Town or the Grand in Joburg, and then you can... You ask them about their sisters or their cousins or their nieces, and they say, "Oh, you like? I invite her here. She will come to meet you." Very good.
Yes, I think I'm just saying this because I got into an accident a few weeks ago.
Did your boat also get stuck in a canal?
Absolutely. Yes.
All right. Good for you. It just shows. You know what that shows? That tells me you're traveling. It tells me you're going places, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Tells me you are living life.
I'm also very talented if I can also, like, you know, travel and steer ships at this point.
Indeed. Yeah, well done.
I'm thinking about that feeling when you're an inconvenience to others.
Oh, wow.
Like when I...
That's
when
such a good point.
When I had my accident... Just the fact that my car was on the side of the road and still had to be in one lane and was a two-lane road. And now, you know, there was a backlog and people had to steer around me. And I felt like, ugh, traffic is now backing up because of me. Yeah. Imagine what it's like to be the person.
Yeah, to be on that boat.
Steered.
So embarrassing. So embarrassing. So you're so right.
I wonder if
I'm cringing on their behalf.
I couldn't agree more. Like, that's such a horrible feeling. I also hate being an inconvenience. Like, if I'm in the shop and someone comes along with their trolley, I just automatically get out of the way because it's worse for me to be in the way for them than it is for me to just get what I need and keep them waiting for like a minute or two. So, and there are some people who don't care about this stuff. They've got no sense of like personal space or spatial awareness. And I suppose this poor guy who was piloting this boat, I don't think he'll ever get work in shipping again. I mean, that's like the most embarrassing thing. Imagine when they all get together for drinks, they're like, there's old, what's his name? Rudolph or Julio or whatever his name
is. Shame, poor Rudolph.
What an idiot, you know? What an idiot.
Because I instantly start to apologize even at the shops when you're standing at the till.
Yeah.
If something happens where, like, one of the things I'm buying doesn't have a barcode and then someone has to go and get the barcode for me, instantly I'm like, I'm an inconvenience. I have to apologize. If something happens with my card and declines or something has to be reloaded, I feel bad for that. Even afterwards, once everything has been paid for, and you now just have to deal with getting a slip or your cash. And then it's like, I need to be out of here.
I have a question for you, yeah? Do you get more embarrassed if this happens at Woolies?
Well, particularly with the declining card thing. Have you ever thought, does this happen to you? I don't know. Maybe I'm just like a minority in this. When your card declines and you know it's because the card has an issue, not because you don't have the cash. You want to now explain it to people who have no.
No, you want to just go to the people in the queue. And like, can you? You want to get on that thing that goes, teller six, have your My School and Woolies cards ready. And then also, please understand, Healy's card did work earlier today. This is a technical fault.
Yes.
It's not because she's dirt poor and has run out of money and her card is being rejected.
It's not because of that. Or maybe it is, but she would not like you to know about it. Tell her six, please. Have your Woolworths and My School cards ready.
I once saw a woman who was obviously like devastated that her card wasn't working, and she just burst into tears because it was declined. And I'm not sure how to deal with that. So luckily I wasn't in the queue right behind her, but I saw it and I couldn't help feeling sorry for this poor woman because she was obviously not only embarrassed, but maybe there was actually no money on the card and she now had to do something about these groceries. That's got to be a terrible feeling.
Yeah, that sucks.
I wonder how many
people... I had an experience recently when I was at Pick and Pay, by the way. I had an experience. I was standing in the queue and a guy comes up to me.
Yeah.
And he's got a basket. He's got maybe one or two things in the basket. And he very gently comes up to me and says to me, like he basically is asking me for help. He's asking me for some, you know, to pay for his groceries.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh.
And yeah. And it was very like, it was like just very sad and whatever. And I said, yes, sure. No problem. You know, meet me at the till. Cause I just had to quickly like finish what I was doing. And I didn't have, I would have given him cash, but I didn't have any.
Yeah.
So then I, then anyway, I do my groceries. He meets me at the till. And then when we got to the till, there was a lot more stuff in that basket than when he approached me. It was like, and you know, it was all like, you know, reasonable stuff that you would need to feed sure. yourself or your family. You know, there's peanut butter and there was, you know, canned stuff or whatever it was. There was nothing like crazy. And I was, but I did think like, okay, this is at least three times. And yeah. now you have to tell, I'm like, I can't be like your bro, you know, this is not what we agreed on. And then oh, no. I have to tell you this. I have to say this, okay? I was like, you know what? Okay, this is my good deed for the week or whatever it is. You know, it's fine.
Sure.
I'd made my peace with it. But then he opened a Pepsi. Uh-oh. And I just thought, you know what?
That's not good.
I mean,
yeah.
Maybe not today. Maybe Pepsi is the thing you get with, you know, the money you didn't spend on your groceries, bro. Like, you know, just make it look a little bit more,
yeah.
you know, more no, helpless. Pepsi really rubbed me up the wrong way. I can't even explain why.
It's almost like when you sort of give a homeless person whatever you've got, like they're going like, I want some food or whatever. So maybe you have something in a packet next to you and you give it to them and then they look at you like kind of, is that it? You know,
yes.
that's the kind of thing that you're talking about. It's almost like you want to say, excuse me? But you also feel like, well, I've got to be charitable, and you don't get to ask questions if you're going to be charitable. You've had
No, you don't.
Yeah, either you do it or you don't.
You know what? I was like, he did a good job that day. I was impressed. As I saw him walking away, I thought, that was a good hustle. Like, I could not have pulled off what he just pulled off. I want to go do that at a store like Gucci. You know what I mean? Just go up to one of those women, like, and be like, I'm so sorry, but I haven't been able to afford this handbag ever. And times are really tough. Could you please just throw it in amongst the rest of the things you're buying? Do you think that would work?
I don't know if it will have the same effect, hey? I don't think so.
Somehow I don't see it working, but it's worth a try, Gillian. You can report to us.
Thank you.
You can report to us afterwards and let us know how it goes.
I'm going to.
So... There's a bunch of things on the agenda for this morning. We've got to talk about some of the stuff that's in the news. We'll get to the headlines just now. And because it's Tuesday, we've got that one thing for the week, which everybody enjoys, so we can find out exactly what the thing is that you're going to do to improve your day. All of that's coming up in a little while. We want to hear from you, 0797482090. So you can tell us what's going on there as well. Sia, what have you been up to since you got back? You've been working nonstop since you got back from Durban, because Durban was like a little mini holiday for you.
A little, but I'm realizing that I'm slowly taking and getting traits from my mother.
Uh-oh.
Which is not a good thing. It's really, really bad. I had to come back and I was doing some admin-y stuff yesterday and cleaning the house. I now realize I talk way too much under my breath, very much like her. and just when I'm alone, which is not right or not normal.
Are you muttering under your breath, like saying rude things about people who pass you by, that kind of thing?
But just also, just... listing things in my head, well, now they're more than just in my head, but out loud. It's like, oh, well, okay, well, look at this now. I have to do the washing, but there's not enough detergents. Okay, well, I now need to go full-blown conversations.
Well, I mean, Leanne was saying yesterday that one of the bonuses, one of the few things she's really enjoyed about masks is that she can mutter like that under her breath and people can't see your...
That's a good point.
People can't see your lips moving, so they don't think you're crazy and they don't think that you're being insulting or that you've got some passive aggressive stuff going on. So that's possibly one positive if you're in public and you've got the mask on.
No, not making me feel good at all. And then this
I think the first problem is Durban.
Hey. It's too early.
No, I'm sorry, man, Durban. What's going on there with those roads? They don't have a beginning. They don't have an end. It's like somebody took that road system drives me mad whenever I go to Durban. It's like somebody took spaghetti and just threw it down from the top, and then none of the roads connect. How do you get anywhere in that town?
What do you mean?
No, I know what you mean.
Yes.
A lot of roads in Durban are just like they suddenly end, or they suddenly they go nowhere. They're like, It's just finished.
No,
wasn't planned properly. It's
I'm not complaining at all. And the irony is, there's a big. It's not an intersection, but I guess all of these lanes intertwine on a highway, and it's called Spaghetti Junction in Durban.
Yeah, exactly.
So, look, it's home.
There's a reason for that.
It's home to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, we all thought that Sia had gone home to accept the Zulu throne. Because he was gone at exactly the right time.
All right.
Yeah, and you know, they were talking about who the next king is going to be. And we all thought maybe it's Sia, you know, because he was gone suspiciously at precisely the moment that we thought he was meant to be, you know, crowned as king. But I think they decided against
that. That would be so cool.
Wouldn't it be great if we could welcome him back as King Sia Sangweni?
I think
you know, for a nation that loves to sing and dance a lot, they didn't appreciate my suggestions of playing music from The Lion King, because that's how I wanted to be revealed as the next king. And they said they aren't going to do that. So I'm not going to be king.
Good for you. You stand your ground, okay?
Thank you. Don't let
people tell you how to lead your what do you call it? It's not a monarchy. It's a what?
Yeah, your sovereign state.
Yes,
your position.
You
don't tell them how to be a king if you're the king. So, Gilly, did you
exactly.
do? I mean, I don't know. You never know with anybody, but you know, like I'm having the Easter weekend off, regardless. I think we all are. But did you do anything for Pesach, or is that not a thing for you?
It is. Usually, it is. You know, you're supposed to do two nights.
Seders.
Celebrating Pesach, but many hours with your family. But the thing is that I value my mental health. So I did not attend.
So you just said no.
Huh.
So
I just said no. It's something I've started to do in the last 2 years. Incredible.
So did the family
doesn't sit well with my mother?
Yeah, I'm sure not. Does she get aggressive with you?
She doesn't get aggressive. She's actually very understanding, thankfully.
Okay.
And what I did is I did stand up for two nights in a row, which I mean, you know, I maybe. You know, if this whole religion thing is real, I might, you know, face some consequences. But you know,
could go very badly for you. But it's good news that you're doing stand up again. That's awesome news.
It is awesome news. Very small shows, very sort of popping up all over the place. Don't know how long they'll last. You know, somebody said to me yesterday, one of the promoters was like, "Oh, it's great that things are getting back," and I was like. I don't know if back is the word we should be using. I mean, I think it's tentative.
Yeah. No, well, listen, I'm hoping that the whole thing will pick up very, very soon because, you know, all this talk of like third waves and there's a certain crowd in South Africa that are, they like the panic. They like to make everybody else panic too. You know, there's people who send around those WhatsApps saying, ooh, you better stock up on this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
These people are going to shut down or they're going to close that or this is not going to happen. Or if you don't have this, then you're going to be screwed.
I've been very firm with people who send me stuff like that.
What do you say to them?
Everything is very difficult. Things are negative.
Yeah.
I just say, I had a friend send me something like that months back.
Yeah.
And I just said, please don't ever send me anything like this ever again.
Oh, really?
With respect.
Did they apologize?
And it was fine. He was cool. Yeah, he said, sure, no problem. Sorry about that. And we moved on.
I do think some people get a thrill out of it. They enjoy making the rest of us panic.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's enough news out there. I have the information I need.
Yeah. Oh, my God. There's so much news. I was talking to a psychologist, a guy called Dr. Hanan Bushkin for the TV show. And he was telling me that
I know Hanan.
He's really
my therapist.
He's great, huh? He was saying to me that you've got to be very careful about your diet of news. You know, there are lots of older people, like our parents and so on, who, I mean, I know Sia and I have spoken about this before. Both of our dads, they love watching the news. And I tell you
Same.
If you have that stuff day after day after day, it's going to eventually drive you crazy. It's going to make you feel like the world is much worse than it is.
100%. My parents watch news all day, and for months I've tried to convince them to stop because it's incessant.
Yeah. I think
it's just in them now.
It was also someone on the TV show, Songhez Ozibi, who used to be the editor of Business Day, who said, you know, when he goes to like rural parts of the country where he has family and friends, and he asks them about the state of the world, they're a lot more optimistic and positive about things. And normal, he said, they're normal. They don't get swept up in all the outrage on Twitter. They don't get upset about all the bad news because they're not taking that stuff in. They're doing normal stuff. And he said that...
Well, we end up thinking that that world that we are engaging with, we end up thinking the world of news and social media and everything that we're being fed is everything, is the whole truth, when really it's correct. It's a very, very dense, small part of the truth.
Yeah, correct. Absolutely.
You know? I don't know. I guess I'm way too far gone then with all of this news and information, but I'm thinking back to a few months ago when... one of my sisters who's in finance.
Yeah.
And you know, she works for a major bank, but particularly she's on the company financing or business financing side of the bank.
Yeah.
And she was ignorant, I guess is the word, or rather, yeah, ignorance is the word. She didn't know how bad things were in the country on a person-to-person level because she was in an industry where people were still working. You know, finance, not a lot of people had been laid off or retrenched. And she doesn't own a TV. She's not big on social media. So she was living in this bit of a bubble of, okay, well, I'm working from home now.
Yeah.
And my friends who are also relatively in finance or whatnot are still good. She didn't even know that like retrenchment was a big thing. She was like, oh, okay. I'm like, wait a minute. People trust you to like finance their new business trucks, but you didn't know this. That makes me want to break out in hives a little to think that you can be so out of the loop so much.
Isn't that the opposite though of those people who are they've got a healthy kind of outlook on the whole thing, and they're connected to the news, but they're not watching it all the time. Then there are those people who put their head in the sand and they actually don't know what the hell's going on. And those people are just as infuriating. Yeah. I mean, they can drive you crazy too, because they just don't care about anything except their own little bubble. And you know,
because they're fine not knowing as well.
Yeah.
That's the scary part.
I mean, Nicku says here, in Potchefstroom, there is forever a fuckhead, he says, that says the liquor stores are going to close. Can you imagine what a panic that sets people off on in Potchefstroom?
What else do you have to look forward to there?
Right. Dogozo wants to argue with you, Gilly. He says, like, when you're talking about Durban roads not making sense, he says Cape Town has a road in the foreshore that was built halfway. So Durban has none of those.
But I mean, at least that's sexy. You know, it's big. It's like in the middle of town. It's like, ooh, where's it going to go? Are they going to finish it? Aren't they going to finish it? You know, Durban is just like those roads just end. And then once you're at the end of that road, you are lost forever. You go into it. Basically, you never come back from the end of that road.
It's like a black hole.
Yes.
So LB says here, I deleted Facebook and Twitter for this reason. I don't need to be angry all the time. If you had to get rid of one of the social media channels, what would you get rid of? Which one would you get rid of first? Really? You think Facebook is the worst?
No, I just think it's the least interesting.
So, I mean, which one do you like the most?
I like them for different ones for different reasons. I think TikTok is the most entertaining. I think Instagram is where you get to see visually, like see people's lives. And Twitter is the funniest.
Is it the funniest?
It's the funniest. It's so difficult. It's challenging. It's a challenging environment. But for me, like some of the funniest commentary on anything that's happening happens on Twitter and nowhere else.
Who do you really rate, since we're talking to you about comedy? I mean, who do you really rate in comedy as the big international stars in the world at the moment? Because it's changed so much over the last couple of years.
Who do I rate as comedians?
Yeah.
I mean, one of my all-time favorites of the big guys is Chris Rock. He's probably my favorite.
Amazing.
And then there are acts that I've been watching over the last couple of years who have just blown me away. Somebody like Ali Wong. If you haven't watched Ali Wong's two specials, you are just missing out on life. She is one of the most insanely funny people on earth. There's a comedian named Tig Notaro that I'm obsessed with. a lot, and all of these people are out there. I mean, there's a woman on like, I watch everything. I watch all the acts. Like, I watch everything from 5 minute spots on, you know, late night shows to Netflix specials. I watch it all. And there are just so many good gems out there. Like, there's a woman named Janelle James who's on one of those short Netflix specials that are 15 minutes long that you would never have heard about. So funny. I mean, these are the people that I rate.
That's I love that. There's so many comedians who I've always, you know, I've collected like comedy DVDs in the days when DVDs were a thing. Of those true greats, like, you know, I've always said Eddie Murphy is like the king of comedy, and I loved Billy Connolly, and you know, and there were a couple of them who were really legendary at the time. George Carlin, obviously, and those guys. But I've got to say to you, like, Chris Rock is probably still one of the most. He's stayed relevant for the longest, and he's so good at what he does.
Absolutely. But that's what happens when you're a comedian who stays working.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, and so constantly good. Is out there working and engaging with people. I think that's what ends up happening.
Because I saw this new dude. I've got to find his name for you on YouTube. But there's this new kind of. I think he's an English comedian. But this guy was killing it, and I couldn't believe that I'd never heard of him before. And I think he's been around for about 5 or 6 years. And there are so many talented, brilliant comedians that are coming up now. I'll find his name for you because I think Okay, so last week, do you remember the one thing that we said you must learn, Sia, is that you should learn the names of at least 5 different cheeses, and learn something about wine, so that you don't embarrass yourself when you're at some fancy thing, and people. Suggest that you eat a certain cheese of a cheese board, or, you know, you got to know what you're dealing with. Otherwise, you could end up taking like a bite of something that's really gross. And trust me, I've done that. You know, when you think, oh, that looks like a nice cheese, and you taste it, and it's like feet.
Can I tell you how I tried to put this into practice?
Yes.
When I was flying back to Joburg and I was at the airport lounge, I went around. They have a selection of cheeses and crackers. I went around, they're going, yes. Then like 2 cheeses in, I couldn't pronounce anything anymore. So I thought, okay, abort mission. Go, leave, goodbye.
I've got to help you. I don't know what any of the cheeses are. You know, I go to a cheese shop in London. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And have all local cheeses there. So I go there especially. And I always want to buy cheese, but I don't know the difference. I only know, oh, does this taste good or doesn't this taste good? And so then I have to taste the cheeses, but I don't know what I want. So then when I come in there, it's always just like, just feel a lot of cheese pressure, you know?
Yeah, I'm the same. I don't know anything about cheese, and I don't like, I've got such boring
taste. I love it so much.
I've got such boring taste in cheese that I suppose maybe it's just not meant to be for me. But
I'm adventurous. I like lots of different kinds of cheeses. You can't scare me with a cheese.
Well, then maybe you can teach us a few things, because it sounds like you probably know way more than me. So today...
I don't, but you have to have an adventurous palate.
So today and for this week, you're going to do something very different. For this week, you're going to arbitrarily tip abnormally. So if you deal with anybody, and this could be like the person who takes your trolley away at the shops, it could be a waiter or waitress, it could be... someone who your security guard at the mall, it could be anybody, and you're going to tip abnormally. So you're going to tip based on nothing to do with their actual service. You're just going to give them an abnormally large tip or some arbitrary number, whatever you've got in your pocket, and you're going to do it based on completely ridiculous things. Like, you'll see that, you know, they shine their shoes, or you'll see that they've got a neat and tidy uniform, or you'll see that they're, you know, they smile extra broadly when they see you. In other words, have nothing to do with what they're actually there to do. You're going to tip them abnormally, and you see what happens. Then you're going to might even have a conversation.
How much are we talking about? Like,
well, if you've got 100,
Bill Gates giving away half his fortune.
Whatever you, so today or for at some occasion this week, because we're not all doing things every single day anymore, because we're in mostly at our houses. But you're going to go out of your way to give them like half of what's in your wallet at that stage for no good reason. You're not going to explain it. You're not going to tell them why. You're just going to do it. You're just going to give a whole lot of extra money to someone for no good reason. How about that?
Here's a question that's just popped up around that. What if I have already bought someone their groceries, including a Pepsi? Does that count?
Who's that
that's from? A listener.
Oh, okay.
It's from Gapta.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, Gapta. Yes, I've Gapta's messaged us yes. before. No, you have to do
I don't
this.
Know. Sometimes, you know. That's a weird question, I guess, but I'd like to know the answer.
So it's not charity. It's just you have to give away money, and you're going to give it arbitrarily to someone who might not even deserve it. Even if they're rude to you, you have to give it to them. So you decide on who that person is this week, and you give them some money and just see what happens.
Okay.
Could be quite interesting. All right, let's get into some headlines.
You know, there's a comedian. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Can I continue with this quickly?
No, go for it. Yeah.
There's a comedian. One of my favorite comedians' names is Gary Gulman, and he talks about how somebody like Bill Gates will never know. There's one thing Bill Gates can't have that we all have, is that he'll never know what it's like to find a $50, well, let's say it's a 50 rand note in like a jacket pocket that he left behind. Like, he'll never understand the joy of that feeling. Like, for him to have that feeling, he would have to find like R1 billion somewhere, like that he had forgotten about.
That's a very good point. I wonder if he ever does find like money lying around and goes, oh, this is a bonus. Because I still think you get a bit of a thrill, no matter how much money you have. I think if you find some cash left lying around. I once found some in a jeans pocket, and I was like, yes. It wasn't even a lot of money, but I was like, this is good, a 20 rand.
So great. It happens when winter comes around. Now's the time for that. You start bringing out your old jackets.
Exactly. All right, so a couple of things in the news this morning. Matsela Koko, who used to be at Eskom, says he wants us to all please stop the Koko hunt. He feels like it's a witch hunt against him. He feels like the whole State Capture Commission, the whole purpose of it is to get him. You know, nothing like his ego to bring us down on a Tuesday morning. Former Eskom CEO Matsela Koko on Monday said the State Capture Commission must stop what he called the Koko hunt, or targeting him in their investigations. He was back at the commission, where he said it must be aware of people who say things about him just to make him look bad. You know, all those people who are just wandering around with a chip on their shoulder about Matsela Koko. He's done nothing, he said. Why should he be victimized like this? Me, 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 me. I mean, do we even need to hear more about that story?
Well, I haven't even heard of this Koko guy, okay, or whatever. So,
yeah. So he's feeling sorry for himself, so let's ignore him. Cyril Ramaphosa has defended government's efforts on acquiring vaccines. He said government leaders have not been sleeping on the job, despite losing what he acknowledged is a little time. So have you heard how many people actually have vaccines in the country? Because at this stage, they've only really...
I feel like it's 150,000 or something.
Yeah, they've only really given it to medical people. Have you even heard from anyone that you know who's personally received a vaccine?
Yes.
You have? Tell us.
Yeah, somebody who works in a public hospital gotten the vaccine.
A doctor, nurse?
A doctor, yeah. A doctor.
And how long?
That's all I got.
Is that it? That's all you got? Sia, have you heard of anyone?
It's been a while. Oh, actually, no, sorry, another person. My biokineticist has also gotten it last week.
Who? Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I've...
That's all right.
I did sort of admit that I'm getting vaccine envy now when I see... I didn't even know that I know so many doctors or people who are related to doctors, for example. Now everyone is posting about it. I want to get it now as well.
Yeah.
But I don't think we spoke about this yesterday, but did you see over the weekend, I think it was Discovery, who released a statement alluding to the fact that they could vaccinate X amount of people. They have the supply to vaccinate X amount of people.
Well, not the supply. Okay, sorry, Sia. I got a letter from Adrian Gore. Okay, he emailed me
personally. He wrote to you, yeah. Tell us.
Yeah, because it says there, Dear Gilly, and then at the end it's signed Adrian Gore.
It's got to be personal.
He writes me letters personally. He said that private companies still can't procure vaccines.
Yeah, that's true.
Only governments can. No, none of the vaccine companies will sell to private companies. But he was like, but if they could though.
That's what it was.
If they could though, but if they could, and then again, though, we will. Like, he was like, I know what you're thinking we're thinking it too. And
well, someone called George Lunatic says that the number's somewhere around 200,000, but you're called George Lunatic. Right. So how do we know how to, you know, whether to believe you or not?
It's a reliable source.
He's not like a vaccine lunatic. He's something else lunatic. You know what I mean?
So apparently, according to the president, there's been growing criticism of the government's plan. He says while he was touring the Aspen manufacturing facility in the Eastern Cape, that they are on track. He said, we're on target. We're accumulating more vaccines on an ongoing basis. And he said that 30 million vaccines had been acquired from the recently approved Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which has been used to inoculate thousands of healthcare workers as part of an implementation study. And he said, he told reporters that negotiations with other producers were in their final stages. But it is really slow. And a lot of people are saying, look, at this rate, if we carry on inoculating people at this rate, it's going to take us like 5 years for everyone to get the vaccine. I want, if this means we don't have to walk around with masks anymore, if it means we don't have to socially distance anymore, if it means we can start opening up all the places that have been shut for the longest time, then I'm all for it and I'll be in that vaccine
queue. Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
And then this is an interesting story. The Transport Department has launched Easter road safety campaigns with a whole lot of new tech. I don't know how well these road safety campaigns at Easter work, but obviously we're worried because people take to the roads, they go away for the weekend on holiday, but a lot of people also go up to Maria for church services and so on. And South Africans.
Well, what is a campaign? What does a campaign consist of, do you think?
Well, in this case.
Like posters.
In this case, they say they've got new law enforcement technologies that they're introducing, such as body worn cameras worn by officers. You know, like in America, where the police officers actually wear the cameras.
Okay.
They said that the government was launching the campaign under a dark cloud after six people, including two toddlers, were killed at a weekend crash in the Free State. And this tragedy, they said, must remind us that we should be cautious when we're on the roads. The officials have introduced body-worn cameras. The deputy minister also handed over vehicles to the Northwest government to help strengthen law enforcement in the province. And they are putting up posters, which is something that government likes to do. They say things like,
oh, they love a poster, hey? I love a poster.
They love it.
If I never see another poster, if I see a poster, I get so angry. I think about like the designer that got paid. I think about all the money that went into making a poster that goes, please drive safely. And people are like, drunk people are like reading that poster and the letters are like getting intermingled. It's like, what is the point of a poster? If I ever see a poster.
No, it's a total waste of money. And they're saying things like, you know, obvious things that we all know already. And that if you don't know, you really shouldn't be at the wheel of a car. Better late than never, don't speed. You know, we needed to hear that from government. That's such a great use of government money. And things like, the livelihood of many families are in your hands. Don't speed.
That's what I always think when
I'm
about to speed. I think
absolutely.
I'm going to speed now. And then what has happened is sometimes I go to like a public bathroom and then I see a poster that says the life of a family is in your hands, and I immediately stop speeding. It's incredible.
That's right.
It works.
Boris Johnson has joined more than 20 world leaders in calling for a new global settlement to help the world prepare for future pandemics. In an article for newspapers around the world, leaders including Macron of France, Angela Merkel of Germany have said COVID has posed the biggest challenge since World War II. Another pandemic or health crisis is a matter of not if but when, they say. And the pandemic has shown that nobody is safe until everyone is safe. So they decided to all write a big letter together, and they basically said they're going to build a multilateral system in the world to bring countries together and dispel the temptations of isolationism and nationalism and address the challenges. This is political speak. This is a bunch of politicians trying to make themselves useful after not one of them have particularly dealt with this in any really incredible way. I saw that even New Zealand is now having problems, despite the way they've been praised for the way that...
what problems are they having?
Well, apparently their hospitals are suddenly
like
being
overrun. Maybe two people had COVID.
Well, I think that, you know, New Zealand's only got about 500 people in it. So for a hospital to be overrun, you know, 10 people is like a lot. And then finally, Ghislaine Maxwell, who is Epstein's madam, the woman who was procuring women for him. She's had two new federal charges of sex trafficking and sex trafficking of a minor filed against her. The new charges introduce a fourth victim to the case against her. She's accused of recruiting an underage girl for sex with Epstein at his home in Palm Beach in Florida. There was no immediate comment on the new accusations from her lawyers. She's currently in jail in New York awaiting trial. And this makes all the charges, there were six and now there are eight. So it just keeps getting much,
you know,
much
it's
worse.
All very, everybody can say whatever they want until there is an actual conviction. And then it's like, oh, no. There's something, you know, it's very, very hard to deny a conviction.
Oh, yeah. And I think she must be one of the most hated people in the world. She did get her vaccine, by the way. We spoke about this the other day. You know, even horrible assholes get their vaccines. And I just want to play you this quickly. This is her brother, Ian Maxwell, in an interview on BBC Radio 4, saying, "Ah, shame, she's losing her hair in prison." Take a listen.
Oh.
Mm. Oh, boy. Hang on. No, wait. Now we got an ad. I can't believe these things are still playing. Just give me 5 seconds here to just sort out this ad. Yeah, so this is her brother, Ian Maxwell. They're actually a rich English family. And they, you know, the father was a newspaper mogul, and they're quite well known in English social circles. So for him to be upset about his sister losing hair is not surprising.
Ian has been in prison now for nearly 250 days and counting. She is in effective isolation in a cell that measures 6 foot by 9 foot, and which includes a bed, concrete bed, and a toilet. There is no natural light. She is under 24-hour round-the-clock surveillance with 10 cameras, including one that moves and tracks her movements. And on top of that, there are four...
Shocking. Truly shocking.
That are looking at her, and presumably there is another guard looking at the camera feeds.
Did it end? We can't hear it anymore.
You can't hear it anymore? Okay.
Jeff, you're on mute. Anyway.
No, sorry. So I don't know. Hang on.
I thought, wait a minute.
We lost you, Gareth, because you know what? Nobody got time for that. Ain't nobody got time.
So basically, this is her brother busy moaning about how hard it is for Ghislaine Maxwell to be in jail and how difficult. And they are keeping her under extremely close scrutiny because of what happened to Jeffrey Epstein, you know, that the suspicious.
Of course.
So. He's saying, oh, it's terrible. She's got a concrete bed. She's just got a toilet. It's 6x6. She's losing her hair. And so if anybody was looking for someone to feel sorry for today, that her brother suggests Ghislaine Maxwell.
Oh, nice.
If you're trying to get out of bed, his voice is not the one you need to know. That can lull you back to sleep in 2 seconds.
All right. So those are the things.
People want to do horrible things and then they don't want to sleep on a concrete mattress.
Right.
You have to say to yourself, myself, if I'm going to traffic girls across the country, to be raped and assaulted, can I then sleep on a concrete mattress? And these are the questions you have to ask yourself.
Those are the tough questions. Mm. So those are the headlines for this morning. And we're going to cross to JJ Cornish now, I'm very happy to say. Jean-Jacques Cornish is a regular on our show. He comes to us every couple of days to give us an update on what's going on the African continent. JJ, it's nice to see you this morning. And it's not as if we don't have a lot to discuss today. So first of all, can we talk about Mozambique, please? Because a lot of people, including Sia, have suddenly become very anxious. Mozambique is right next door to us. And although Al-Shabaab used to be something we worried about in Kenya and Tanzania, and then later on the north of Mozambique, they're getting further and further south. And we need to know what's happening here because South Africans are even being killed. Hotels are being raided. And it seems that, that wave of violence is heading further and further south, could be on our border at any time.
Well, look to you, Garth. You know, Gareth, I've been listening to you for a little while now. With this new system, I can eavesdrop for a little while. And all I just wanted to say, I wanted to put a poster up saying, keep calm and eat Gorgonzola. That would cover the last little bit. Mozambique is grown-up trouble for us. You know, we can't go in alone. We've said it before. We couldn't, as South African soldiers, go in just about anywhere because we're in no state to do it. We have to have a collective operation there. Now, the ISIS or Al-Shabaab, in fact, the jihadi terrorists have been operating there since 2017 in one of the richest gas reserves in the world. Now, Total, the French company that is exploiting that, said a little while ago that they were holding up on that because of this terrorism. 1,500 people have been killed. You know, these guys started with machetes, beheading people. And that was because they believed they were being marginalized. The fact is they're now very well armed and assisted by other terrorist groups, jihadi terrorist groups from around the world. We understand that there are as many as 12 South Africans fighting with the terrorists. Now, up there, Palma is the town that serves on the very northern border of Mozambique, a terribly long country, you know, mm-hmm. long like Chile, all the way up the coast.
Right.
And it serves that part of the gas exploitation field, but nothing has come out yet to enrich the Mozambicans, which is, of course, one of the poorest countries on the planet.
Absolutely.
Now, until they can do that, the exploitation, until they can get that, the marginalization of the people they cannot address.
Mm.
But the South Africans have been called in. Others have been called in. We do have this SADC organ on peace and security. But SADC simply hasn't got the means to put in a force. Now, Americans have said they've sent in some specialists to do some training. But that hasn't worked thus far. Certainly, the Mozambicans are quite unable to contain this. So what happened in Palma was there was this attack. Some analysts get very angry when we say that the jihadis overtook it. That doesn't seem to be the case. A number of South Africans were involved. I understand 43 have been found now or are all accounted for. One, Adrian Nell, was killed.
Yes.
Now, the killing of a national means that South Africa is going to have a more muscular response. But does that mean that we will band together with other Africans? And even, I said, SADC's not able to do it. Not even the African Union is, because putting boots on the ground costs a lot of moolah.
Yeah.
And we don't have that. We don't have it, South Africa. We don't have it as SADC. And we don't have it as the African Union. So if they're going to put in troops, then we're going to have to get that money from the United Nations in all likelihood.
And of course, the other embarrassing thing about this is that if we did send our military there, it might even be worse for us, not better, because they'd see how awful our military were, and they'd look at us and go, "Well, that's a prize worth taking." I saw some of the newspaper editors saying over the weekend that they didn't think it was a good idea for us to be too gung ho here either.
No, absolutely. As occurred shortly after democracy in Lesotho,
yeah.
You know, when we were showed to be effectively a rebel at that point. Well, clearly our military is a little better now. But things like, you know, our HIV proportion of troops that are suffering from HIV, the number for every pair of boots you put on the ground, you have to have something like 11 back home. And we simply don't have those numbers.
Sure.
We can't do it. We cannot be a peacekeeping force. We can send some troops to certain trouble spots in Africa. We have done it. But the point is, as soon as South Africa became democratic South Africa, mm-hmm. many, many Africans said, here we go. These are the guys with the loot. They can help us out.
Right.
You know, something like 75% of United Nations peacekeeping operations, military peacekeeping operations, involve Africa.
Right.
So they need peacekeepers all over the place. And right now on our border, we have this very, very serious problem, and which is growing. And it's growing because of the increasing support, jihadi support for these people. They claim allegiance to Al-Shabaab, to ISIS, to others, and they are killing Mozambicans in great numbers, in disturbingly great numbers. Something has to be done. We can't do it. What about the African standby force? That hasn't actually eventuated, but it was supposed to have been set up for this purpose, you know, to put in troops where necessary.
JJ, I need to
then again, when you have government,
I need to understand here, because a lot of people are saying that really the whole Islamic side of this argument is really a convenience for Al-Shabaab or for ISIS, whoever you want to call them, because they're really a criminal organization. They're trying to gain control of oil fields, of gas fields, of plunder. And really the jihadi part of it is a convenience, but it is also a spreading of the religion by the sword, and you know, very many people are being converted at gunpoint, and if not converted, killed. So the helplessness that so many governments have felt in the face of this is related to both of those things, the criminal aspect and to the jihadi aspect of it. How do you think Mozambique's government are placed to deal with this? I mean, we know they're a very weak government. They haven't got any money. They are in hock to China, as we've discussed many times before. Is there anyone who can save them?
Well, the fact is that jihadis don't really get in until the people are very unhappy.
Mm.
And when people are unhappy, however you look at it, whatever you believe, it's for economic reasons. They are poor. They are being marginalized. And certainly the jihadis step in and exploit that. All over the world that is happening. In Mozambique, that is the case. As I say, they started out, we're unhappy, we're being marginalized, you've got this gas, we're not feeling the effects of it. That's why they went at things with machetes. So when the jihadis came into the system, there's no doubt that there was an international cabal of people doing that. With the Niger Delta, we're being exploited, say the people there, we're not getting any benefit from the petrol, the oil, and the environment is being raped by you.
Yeah.
And that is why the that has happened there. Now, the jihadis haven't managed to get in there to the extent that they have in Mozambique, but certainly Nigeria, which is literally half and half, half Muslim, half Christian,
right,
has huge problems maintain or trying in any way to restrain the jihadi influence, certainly up in the northeast of the country. So yes, your point about them exploiting it is absolutely germane. They are there, and they take every opportunity they can to use unhappiness. Now, what provoked 12 South Africans to go and fight there for the jihadis? Well, I mean, there's all sorts of social reasons for that, I've no doubt. But sure, the fear is with security analysts that the South Africans actually fighting for the Islamist terrorists in Syria, for example.
Yeah.
So why, you know, that they've got drawn in, so they are being recruited and exploited in the same way, I suppose. You know, this is the Ghislaine Maxwell of political activism.
Mm.
You know, you can get young impressionable people and persuade them that they've got to go and fight for what they hold true, and that is happening. And then they return to South Africa, and that is when you really have to be frightened of them, as occurred, of course, in many Islamic countries around the world. When the Islamists came back, and certainly in Algeria was the case, they came back from fighting in Saudi Arabia and in the Maghreb part of the world, and there we have them coming back and bringing Algeria to its knees.
JJ,
can I ask a question? Maybe a simplistic question.
Yes.
What is the end game for them? You know, what is the thing that they purport to be their end game?
Well, I mean, it's to create an Islamic world, to create a Sharia law around the world. But to do that, it's going to cost them a lot of money. And so that is why they get in areas where there is oil, where there is gas, and try to get a hand on those reserves to make their fight or to finance their battle for a Sharia world.
So it's in
world.
Fact to finance the battle and not the other way around. They're
correct.
Not trying to get at the resources and the money through the method of, you know, recruitment or whatever it is.
Sort of six of one and half a dozen of the others.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't heard, I have to say, of people, of Sharia fighters, jihadi fighters, making money and then going off and buying stretch limos.
Yeah.
They keep fighting. So I would think it's assume it's the first part of it. They're there to finance their struggle for Sharia around the world.
It's an end justifies the means kind of situation. So JJ, can we just quickly turn our attention, because I know we've got only a little bit of time here, to the Suez, because we've all heard about this huge problem with this ship that we were joking about earlier that's blocked the Suez Canal. Just tell us what the political implications of this might be, because you're an expert on Africa, and we all kind of forget that Egypt is part of Africa and that Suez Canal is a hugely important trade route. What do you think might happen as a result of this mishap? And what are the implications for countries like Egypt and even others in that part of Africa, Somalia and Ethiopia and so on?
When it was convenient for Egypt to forget they were part of Africa, they were happy to do it. Egypt is very much part of Africa, but it gets more, for example, from America in terms of aid than the whole of Africa put together.
Yeah.
So Egypt is a very special case, and the Suez is the most special of cases. The Ever Given is now being sailed to the Bitter Lake, it's called. It's an offshoot of the Suez Canal. I went to the reopening of that canal in 2015. The Egyptians invited me when they widened it. Sadly, they didn't widen it at the point that the Evergreen attempted a U-turn or whatever it did. I don't know. You've seen that cartoon with the two balloon captions coming out. Bet you can't do a U-turn in the Suez Canal. And the other one says, hold my beer. But anyway, this has cost something like 225 million rands a day, the blockage. There are ships sailing down from the north already. And with the Ever Given out of the way while they tested for damage, the canal is effectively unblocked. There are about 400 ships waiting to go through it. Billions and billions and billions. 10% of the world's maritime traffic goes through there. And, of course, 90% of goods are moved by sea in the world. Now, what happens is the very organizations we've just been talking about must be looking at that, rubbing their hands and thinking, aha, here's an opportunity. If they can block the Suez Canal, then you can imagine the havoc they could wreak.
Yeah.
So security-wise, Egypt is going to have to bolster its security there, and the world is going to have to help with that. In terms of salvage, they didn't have the big tugs. They used 40 huge tugs to move that boat. They didn't have them to hand. They're going to have standby salvage operations to prevent or to avoid or obviate this kind of problem ever recurring. The thing is now, the world is going to have to look at all the maritime problems facing it and review them in the light of what has just happened. You know, those ships that went around Africa certainly have to face the storms on the Cape of Storms, renamed the Cape of Good Hope.
Mm-hmm.
But worse, those came from the north, would have had to go around the Gulf of Guinea, which is below Nigeria, which is the worst area for piracy on the high seas. So these are problems that the world has to face. But to say we're not going to have the Suez Canal blocked again is like saying we won't get another pandemic. I think this is something that has opened the eyes of the security authorities. And certainly, I think we're going to have to do something very special and very radical to avoid this sort of thing happening again.
Well, JJ, I'm afraid we're out of time for this morning. I know there was Rwanda on the agenda, and we'll talk about them next time we see you. But thank you very much again for your insights in terms of not only what's going on right next door in Mozambique, but what has been a great source of material for comedians like Gilly over the last couple of days with this ship got stuck in the Suez. It's good to see you. Thank you, JJ Cornish. This is Africa Analysis, which is brought to you by the Joburg Business School. And JJ Cornish is our expert when it comes to that. It is 7 o'clock. When we come back, we will have a whole lot more for you. Gilly Apt is with us, Sia Sangweni, me, you, and everybody else. You know what to do. 0797482090 if you want to be part of the conversation. CliffCentral.com.